It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, WPR's Sean Johnson explains the dozen-plus changes to election laws that state Republican lawmakers are working on. First, Wisconsin's chief epidemiologist said last week that COVID-19 could go from being a pandemic to endemic by the end of this year. That comes as countries like Spain say they want to shift to an endemic approach, treating the coronavirus like other more common viruses. So what exactly does endemic mean? We're talking now about the future of COVID-19, what it will take to get there, and what the end of the pandemic would mean for our day-to-day lives. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your questions about the future of COVID-19? How about the transition from being a pandemic to an endemic disease? What kind of thresholds do you use in your personal life to decide when you're going to take up a safety precaution for COVID or move on from a particular precaution? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Albert Koh is the Raj and Indra Nui Professor of Public Health and a Professor of Epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health. Dr. Koh, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's a real pleasure to join your show.
Can you start us off with a working definition? What do we mean when we say a disease is endemic?
So endemic means that a disease or an infectious agent has a constant presence and also has a usual prevalence in a population within a geographic area. Now, that said, you can get different levels of transmission or disease burden. For example, some diseases can be hyperendemic and others could be have much less levels of transmission. And then the other is that you could also have seasonal highs. You could have some endemic diseases that are more common in the winter. Influenza is a good example, which fall off during the warmer summer months.
And there's no switch, right? That today we're in a pandemic, tomorrow we're in an endemic, and everybody agrees on a particular definition. This is going to be a gradual process?
Well, certainly it's not going to be a flip of a switch, and it's going to be a gradual process. And the key issue here is that word usual prevalence, that, you know, where we can expect or we can project how this disease is going to affect us, how COVID specifically is going to affect us and how the SARS-CoV-2 virus is going to be transmitted. It's really too early for that. You know, we're in a pandemic. This is going to be a gradual trend. Gradual evolution, and it's going to be, you know, we are going to have a situation where, you know, the transmission hasn't evolved or settled for several reasons and reasons that we can control into a state which we can predict what's its usual prevalence going to be, not only for this year, but for future years.
You mentioned influenza. I'd like to look at that as an example. We had just over 100 years ago this global pandemic, very dangerous disease. It didn't end all at once. It became this endemic disease every year. Some people die of flu. Some years we have much worse seasons. Some years we have milder seasons. Is that a picture of a possible future for COVID-19?
Yeah, so there are important differences. Certainly between the influenza virus
sure.
and the COVID virus. The COVID virus is just much more highly transmissible. But you're right, Rob. You know, the influenza, the 1918 Spanish influenza, you know, pandemic, we would have recurrences each year for decades of descendants of that virus that caused disease, you know, in an endemic type of pattern as it slowed out. You know, we had bringing something a little bit more closer to home. We had the H1N1 pandemic in 2009, and we are still seeing circulation of descendants of that virus back in 2009 that are causing seasonal flu epidemics, you know, certainly up to the COVID pandemic. So again, this underscores that this is a gradual process. It's a gradual evolution. And it takes several cycles to understand, you know, where we're going to settle out to get that usual prevalence that we'll know that, you know, these are the number of cases, infections, deaths, and hospitalizations that we'll suffer each year.
Talking to Dr. Albert Koh from the Yale School of Public Health, talking about the future of COVID-19 and the virus that causes it and when and if we would go from our global pandemic to endemic, something that's still there, still dangerous, but is part of our daily lives. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, with your questions about that. That's 800-642-1234. And what leads you to decide now is the time where I'm going to wear masks because of COVID? Now is the time I'm not. What leads you to take more precautions? When do you feel safer doing more stuff? What do you think of the future of that? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jed is with us in Le Coudray. Jed, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Jed?
I just wanted to ask the doctor if the coronavirus, hasn't it always been endemic? Hasn't it been around for a while?
Jed, thanks for the call. As I understand it, Dr. Koh, there are other coronaviruses that that may well be endemic. This, the one that causes COVID-19 for us humans is pretty darn new in the scope of things.
Yeah, that's exactly true. So, Jed, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. We have had coronaviruses for us for centuries, if not longer. The common cold virus is called by a coronavirus. The SARS-CoV-1 virus that caused in 2003, large outbreaks and epidemics in Southeast Asia was also a coronavirus. But this is a very different type of coronavirus, and it's behaving very differently from the common cold coronavirus that, you and I, Rob and Jed, we all get, maybe once every several years. It's much more contagious. It's much more deadlier in terms of causing, hospitalizations and deaths. So, it is a coronavirus. We've lived with these for many thousands of years, but this one is a different one.
Jed, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Koh, one big question about the future of the coronavirus has to do with its mutation rate, how often we get new viruses that behave different, or new variants of the same virus that behave differently. What do we know so far about how quickly this coronavirus can mutate?
Yeah, so this, one thing, so I think there's two issues here. One is how fast it mutates. But then the second bigger question is whether those mutations have an impact, mm-hmm. particularly in our public health impact and on our livelihood. Coronaviruses, it's a type of virus. It's an RNA virus which has frequent mutations in its genome. The DNA the RNA that makes up its genetic material. The big question is that in what we've seen, certainly, our experience during the pandemic is that certain mutations arise that give it, an increased ability to be more transmissible. Also, its ability to potentially escape immunity, whether that immunity is from a natural infection or from prior vaccination. And those are the things that we really worry about. The big kicker in all this is that these we really don't have good models that can project when, where, and how these and what types of these new mutations come up and how they create variants such as Omicron, but also the deadly Delta variant we experienced last summer. So that's a big question mark about the future and this transition from epidemicity or pandemicity to endemicity is whether we're going to be encountering new variants in the future.
We're talking to Dr. Albert Koh, epidemiologist with the Yale School of Public Health. He's with us today to talk about COVID-19, what it would take to transition from the current pandemic stage to an endemic where it's still there. Maybe not the big spikes and huge outbreaks that we see, what it means for our daily lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? What would it take for you to get back to normal? Do you already feel like you've gotten back to normal? And do you think even when the pandemic is officially over, are you going to keep masks around for the future and maybe wear them if there's a bad flu season, a bad COVID season in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the future of the COVID-19 pandemic and what might change when the disease goes from a pandemic to an endemic disease. Dr. Albert Koh is with us from the Yale School of Public Health. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Stephanie is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello. I had like a general question in how maybe the community, at least in like the U.S., is responding to the coronavirus pandemic. I kind of think back on like how in 1918 there was the influenza pandemic and it was a really big thing that happened and people responded in a way. And then I feel like these days, like there's a lot of division and there's a lot of different opinions about it. But it seems like this is very novel for us, like as a, you know, country and also the world to go through this. But then maybe this is novel because 1918, that was a long time ago. So I'm just kind of wondering about like how we can have conversations and talk to people about these kind of things where there's still a lot of division and a lot of different opinions about it.
Stephanie, thanks a lot for the call. I imagine this is still a hot topic for epidemiologists. Albert, what the divisions that have happened when it comes to public health measures related to COVID-19?
Yeah, so that's a subject for a long discussion. But I think the first question, and this is a crucial question that we need to answer, is exactly what the caller asked. We need to understand what we got right and what we got wrong, and we certainly need a national commission to do so, to reflect like we did in our past tragedies. But really, if you look at the scorecard and see how we rate compared to other industrialized countries, we have the highest death rate, you know, per population, because you know, due to COVID, and you know, and so we really do rank low objectively based on just the number of deaths, the number of hospitalizations, the disease burden, and the scale of suffering. So we have to really look into what happened in the past and understand what were those drivers? Why did we get those poor responses? And they're manifold. You know, the caller did mention about our prior experience with influenza. We kind of dodged the bullet back in 2009 with the influenza pandemic, but it wasn't a very contagious or transmissible, and it wasn't a very lethal or virulent virus. You know, and this time we were faced with a challenge which was much greater, which was a virus that's much more severe. And after being infected, and a virus that also is just much more highly transmissible, that really kind of pressure tested our public health system, which has been chronically underfunded in this country. So many reasons, but I think we really need to go through that thoughtful exercise of what worked and what didn't work.
Stephanie, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Kathleen in Madison. Kathleen, hi.
Hello. I've been homebound for 2 years because of this COVID, and I have a lot of rather severe health problems related to the disability that I was born with, and I'm also about to turn 69 years old. Am I going to be homebound the rest of my remaining life, or even when it becomes endemic, how is it safe for someone like me, even if and when it becomes endemic?
Kathleen, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your question. Sorry, this has been a rough couple of years for you, maybe more than most of us. Dr. Koh, what would you say to Kathleen?
Yeah, Kathleen, I really take care of a lot of patients in very similar situations that you've experienced with the isolation, you know, that has gone and really, you know, the suffering in specific segments of our population because of COVID. And I think this reinforces really a basic premise or, you know, for our society is that we are a community. We are a population. So myself getting vaccinated protects my father, who's 95 years old. Rob getting vaccinated protects you, Kathleen, you know, from getting COVID. And, you know, these go back to kind of the fundamentals of the meat and potato of public health is that we care about populations. As a physician, I'm concerned about patients. But if I'm concerned about my loved ones, my community, my population, it really takes all of us to do the right thing. In this case, these were, you know, in the days before we had vaccination, there were face masks, social distancing, decreased gathering. Now we have vaccination, it's, you know, and boosters. That's the key lever to pull in order to protect people like you. And that will take your community getting vaccinated in your state, in our country getting vaccinated.
Thanks again for the call, Kathleen. We are talking about the future of COVID-19. Dr. Albert Koh is with us from the Yale School of Public Health. Back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was just really curious about the doctor's approach to the changing guidance as far as systemic masking, predominantly as it affects school-age children. Obviously, the masking was now found to be quite essential leading into the point of having a vaccination. But now that we do have vaccinations coming out, and it appears to be a reduced efficacy of non-N95 masks towards the Omicron variant, what's your approach towards a more systemic masking policies across schools, public institutions, and such? And how do we move forward through this as we move into an endemic state of the virus?
Tom, thanks for the call. Another huge topic we could spend a whole half hour on, Dr. Koh, but your thoughts on, especially Tom's talking about, I think, masking in our schools.
Yeah, so a couple things. I think we have to remind ourselves there's still 2,600, you know, Americans that are dying each day, you know, from COVID. We are still, you know, COVID in Wisconsin, in my state, Connecticut, is going down. You know, rates are going down. But certainly in many places in the United States, we're still seeing, you know, unacceptable levels of loss of life. And in that type of situation, I think the better part of valor is to do what we can to protect our fellow citizens. And that's certainly vaccination, but we also have to remember that there's always that lag. And, you know, one important group that Tom raised was, you know, children who are just now getting eligible. You know, the less than 5-year-olds are getting eligible for vaccinated. We have low rates of vaccination in our, in our kids from, you know, 5 to 17 years of age. And so, and many of these kids live in multi-generational homes where they're living with elderly people, people perhaps with underlying medical conditions that place them at risk for COVID. And some of these people may not be vaccinated. So, you know, as long as we're on top of this wave, you know, I think the sensible, my personal opinion is the sensible thing is to do what we know works to prevent the transmission, you know, to get out of those unacceptable rates of 2,600 Americans dying a day. Do what we know works as vaccination, wearing face masks, certainly indoors, and reducing our gatherings if we can, especially when we're with people who are vulnerable to the severe outcomes of COVID. Now, how long we're going to have to do that really depends on two important questions. How much we can vaccinate the global population. That's not just Wisconsin, it's not the United States, but the world as a whole, because we know that COVID, you know, travels, you know, doesn't respect any borders. And then the second is the question raised before, whether we're going to have new variants and that uncertainty. So we're going to have to be prepared in the future.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I want to clarify something you just said. You mentioned moving toward vaccinations for 5 and under. That's not approved yet. Do I have that right?
I believe the Pfizer vaccine has been approved for emergency use authorization for less than 5, you know, years of age.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Time for another caller. Scott is with us in Kewaunee. Scott, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Scott?
For the doctor. My understanding is this vaccine for COVID is not really a vaccine. It's medication to boost our immune systems. How often or how many times can you boost your immune system before you might do damage to it?
Scott, thanks for the call. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Koh.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, no, you go ahead and answer Scott's question.
Yeah, Scott, no, that's an important question. And it's important question for all of us, not only people in the community, but ourselves as scientists and physicians. So what we do know about this vaccine is that people, you know, who have gotten 3 doses, this has been a safe vaccine. If you've been infected in the past and get 2 or 3 doses, it's also safe. And also in Israel, they've been giving a fourth dose, and they found that, you know, that's safe. And there's not a, you know, there isn't any precedent. There is no evidence in prior, with prior vaccines where you have what we, what I think you're referring to, Scott, is this, what we call immune exhaustion, that you keep on priming the immune response and then you, you burn it out. That doesn't happen with vaccinations, and that's because you give them at single points in time. And, you know, that certainly can happen if you have chronic infections. HIV is a good example. But in this issue, this situation of vaccinations, where you're giving them spaced out, that you don't get that immune exhaustion type of phenomenon. So, again, I think that reinforces what we know about the vaccine, that they're safe, and that getting these boosters will be an important way to protect people. Now, the question is how many boosters we have to get in the future if we encounter new variants. And that's what, you know, intensive research is being done to really map that out.
Thanks for that call. And Dr. Cole, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Rob. That was a real pleasure. And thank you for your audience for the really great question.
Yeah, thanks to everybody for your calls. That's Dr. Albert Coe, professor of public health and epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health, with us today to talk about the transition from pandemic to endemic COVID-19, what that could look like, and what it'll take to get there.